Last week, there was a shocking case reported in the Washington Post. It was a report from India involving a teenage girl who was raped by her father, but was later beaten by villagers. So the victim was the one punished. Why would that be? Well, local villagers say they punished the girl because she didn't report that her father had assaulted her. The man has now been charged and is awaiting trial. This case, and the thousands of others that take place in India each year, illustrates the problem India has in terms of men's attitudes to women and the attitude of many men and women to the legal system. It also points up the fact that India's police force and court system are failing victims. Now the Indian government has announced that in order to better protect women, that from the 1st of January next year, all mobile phones will have a panic button, and from 2018, all will have GPS tracking. But is beefing up personal security the panacea to the problems India faces? Erin Watson-Lynn is an academic at Monash University. She's currently researching women's entrepreneurship in the Indian diaspora in Australia. She's widely travelled through the subcontinent and has just published an article on this issue of violence against India's women in the Interpreter online magazine. Erin, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thanks, Amanda.
Well, it's an interesting proposition, isn't it? A panic button in the first year without a GPS. What happens when you press the panic button?
So when you press the panic button, it alerts a number of emergency contacts who are the closest to you at that time.
How do they know that? I'm technically ignorant. How do they know that without a GPS tracker?
That's a very good question. There actually hasn't been a lot of information released about how this panic button is going to work and how it's going to be implemented, other than the fact that the government has said that it will alert these people who you nominate as emergency contacts. Then it is the responsibility of those people to contact the local authorities, and then the local authorities will then have to come out and help this person who has activated this panic button. So I think we can see there are a whole range of problems with that process.
Sure are.
In terms of implementation. But we really don't know a whole lot more than that at this stage.
Mm. Well, look, even if you move forward to when they will have GPS, you've raised the point, I think, that some people have said, well, hold on, how's that going to work? Doesn't that mean people can really just find out where the women are all the time? In a sense, a tracking device, not for their safety.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a few challenges there in terms of surveillance. So there's surveillance by whether it's communities or family. Then there's government surveillance as well, which is not just about women. That's about everybody in the community. And the other issue as well is access to GPS technology. And then, of course, the right to actually have the phone with the GPS tracking in the first place. And that's another problem for panchayats around India.
Yeah, you've mentioned that there are a number of areas where everyone has to have permission from the local head honchos, if you like, to have a phone, and some areas where women are not meant to have phones. So that's not going to be very helpful for them, is it?
No, and the irony about that is that the majority of those councils where that is the case are all in the home state of Modi, Narendra Modi, in Gujarat. So that's quite interesting as well. So these panchayats, there's about 250,000 in India, they are local government councils, and they set the rules. So if they decide that women in their community aren't allowed to have a mobile phone, then obviously these women don't have the same access to technology that women do in other areas. So they're obviously disadvantaged, and this system just simply isn't going to work. And often they're some of the most marginalised women in the community and probably the most at risk.
Yeah. Well, you raise the point that a lot of women's rights activists are not so happy anyway, because they say, look, this is a band-aid. It doesn't actually... It might provide some instant help, and we'd all be pleased if that happened to a woman in distress, but it doesn't actually address the fundamental problem causing these issues, and that is the attitude of men to women in India.
Absolutely. So it's not addressing the cultural problems that are there, and it's, I don't think it's just about attitudes, but it's also about the way that with mass urbanisation and consequences of these sorts of movements in India that are resulting in it not being a safe place for women, and the government's not actually addressing those. It's just saying, well, women can have a panic button, and that doesn't. I don't see how that's going to actually help the whole situation.
Now. So we've covered that it doesn't address the fundamental problem, and we've covered the fact that there's quite a few women who wouldn't be able to have phones anyway, so that's not really going to work. But the issue of surveillance, which we just touched on, I mean, I haven't been to India in years. How serious is the notion that having one of these phones with a GPS localising function on it is a risk that the state will misuse that information? I mean, do people really worry about that?
Look, possibly. I think that there will be groups of people who are concerned about that, and they're concerned about how the Modi government will use that information. There are concerns about that, but you know, this has only been announced very, very recently. So it'll be interesting to see how that debate continues over time. One of the big things in India is that people are really concerned about, there's a heightened awareness of things like democracy and net neutrality and so on. So I wonder how they're actually going to get away with this and what the protests will be like over the next year, because I doubt that this is just going to slip under the radar, particularly after what happened with internet.org being introduced into India. There was a huge protest and that's now, I think we'll see the same thing happen with this GPS tracking, that there will be a huge amount of protest over the next year.
Mm. Now, the story of the woman who was so badly treated in her home state, having not reported that her father had abused her, is that sort of thing common, where the victim is the one that gets beaten?
Yes, and I don't think that that's isolated to India either. I think that we do see some more patriarchal communities around the world where women are, if they're the victim, they're actually seen, they're actually seen as the person who has committed a crime, whether it's, sex outside of marriage, for example, is a really common one. So this is something that is a problem. I don't think we can deny that. And I think that's part of the reason why women don't report their crimes as well. There is a culture of shunning and shame. In fact, if you, and I'm sure you've seen the documentary India's Daughter, Nirbhaya, in that they say that the woman, often she's better off dead, and otherwise she's a walking corpse, are the words that they use, if she's been raped. A lot of the culture in India is around notions of purity, which is to do with caste. So if an upper caste woman is raped by a lower caste man, that's seen as something that is, that woman is polluted. So, and that's seen as a significant crime. So it is a big problem, and that's why there are women are less likely to report crimes, although that is changing, particularly since the December 16 Delhi gang rape.
Mm. Have you heard much about these clan councils that operate to try and resolve disputes of this sort, if you can call it such a minor thing as a dispute, and basically go and say, look, let's not go before the courts, let's resolve it. You know, why don't you go back to the police and say that you're not in the right state of mind, you want to take back your statement, and let's find some resolution that works, you know, where the assailant's family pays a large amount of money relative to that family or whatever. Now, when I read that, I thought, well, that's just appalling. I couldn't believe it. But on the other hand, I thought, well, if you're in remote parts of India, your chances of actually getting to a court and getting the matter dealt with might be quite slim. And perhaps that's the local people's way of dealing with an inaccessible judicial system. I find it appalling. But what insight can you offer on that?
So if the woman was to report it to the police and then it was to go through the court system, I actually can't remember the figure off the top of my head, but there are so many cases waiting in India because of its archaic legal system. It's very unlikely that that person will ever be charged or convicted of anything. So it's very difficult to go through that system. These panchayat councils, Largely led by men, which is problematic. There are some states in India where there are reservations for these, so you know, where there are a certain number of councils have to be headed by women, and you think that that might have a positive impact on women in the community. I don't think there's been any research into that. What we do know about these communities that are led by women is that there is a greater provision of public services and public services. However, they're perceived as having a lower provision of public services, which is quite interesting because people aren't used to having women in a leadership role. And what happens is over time, so the longer people who are exposed to that that female leader, the less likely they are to report that there's a lower provision of public goods. So we know that over time that effect falls away. But that's not the case for most councils. So in those areas where there is reservation, it's likely that women have higher levels of education, which means there's probably, you know, more awareness in the community, and these crimes are more likely to be reported, or they're more likely to be dealt with in an efficient manner. However, that's not the case for most states. So it's a very patriarchal system. And these women are completely disempowered in these communities. So there is no other option except to go through their local panchayat if they report the crime.
Look, I know it's a very depressing situation, but are there signs of change?
Absolutely, there are signs of change. What we're seeing is that women are getting greater access to education, greater access to employment opportunities, and we see that replicated across all of the emerging economies. I think that there's a huge uprising at the moment from women, particularly in the major cities like Delhi and like Mumbai. And historically, the feminist movement has always been quite strong. So and men come along for that ride as well. So it's not this female angst against men. Men will join women and work with them towards some kind of equality. And we've seen that right back from Gandhi through to Nehru. These political men have joined the feminist movement. It's more about everyone going for equality together rather than this women, this antagonism against men. So there is signs of progress. And I think that we, you know, just need to we need to continue having these debates and continuing these conversations, because that's where we can start to actually have some cultural shift and cultural change.
Well, that's at least some good news, some silver lining to a very dark cloud. And I thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Erin Watson-Lynn is an academic at Monash University, and she was talking to us about violence against women in India.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.